Welcome to Form of Passion, episode 66. This is the second episode of the new year. I want to thank everybody once again for joining us and continuing, you know, the support and, you know, the patronage that, you know, keeps this going. You know, for those that are uninitiated, this is a podcast that, you know, showcases the lives of people that are involved in hardcore, punk, and metal music and how they arrived at, you know, the point in which they decided this is what they're going to devote their time, their energy, and their, you know, creative, you know, just creative movements towards. At the beginning of each of these episodes, we, you know, talk about our Patreon that helps us, you know, keep, you know, things, keeps the wheels oiled, you know, keeps us moving. You know, what you're going to get if you subscribe to the Patreon is you're going to get an additional episode away from the two mainline episodes on the last Friday of each month. And you can find that Patreon at www.patreon.com/forum of passion. It's $2 a month. But you can pledge however much you like. It's up to you. We also give a shout out to all the recent subscribers of that feed at the top of each of these episodes. So this week we have three. We have Daniel Vandenberg. We have William Horwitz. And we have Chris Matthews. So thank you each of y'all for joining us over there. I want to invite everybody to you know, check those episodes out. They're a lot of fun. They're a little bit different than our regular mainline episodes. They're more discussion-based. Talk about records, shows, concepts, ideas, trends, what have you. It's a kind of a roundtable discussion with various different guests. Today, you know, really the stars aligned with this one because I knew that, you know, this particular band had stuff in the works, but I didn't know that it would be hitting at right the exact time for the announcement of a new record. I have on Mr. Alexander Jones of Undeath. Sir, how are you?
I'm good, man. How are you? Good to see you again.
Wonderful. Good to see you again. How's the new year treating you?
It's been good. It's been hectic so far, but yeah, can't complain.
Okay, good, good. I mean, you know, I imagine you have a ton planned for the year. Everything, you know, I know Undeath be from Rochester. Are you originally from Rochester?
No. I mean, I've lived here for over a decade at this point, so I kind of consider myself from here like now, but, I was born downstate Hudson Valley. Grew up first couple years of my life in Peekskill, lived in like Westchester, White Plains, just kind of bounced around cause my dad worked in the city. And then when I was like 13, I want to say maybe 13 or 14, we moved up here. So I've been here ever since.
That time in the Hudson Valley, which is interesting. We have like this podcast particularly has had multiple people on from Hudson Valley. What do you remember kind of about you bounced around a lot too, kind of like, what do you remember around that time period in your childhood? Like, did you mind having to move a lot? Did you hate it?
You know, I don't really remember a whole lot. I mean, the closest we ever lived to the Hudson Valley was Peekskill. And even that is not like, I mean, it's been a while since I brushed up on my Hudson Valley geography, but I feel like even that is a little bit removed from what people would consider Hudson Valley. But I mean, yeah, when we were there, I was, you know, 5-6 years old. And so memories are hazy. I mean, just a pretty standard, like suburban middle class, you know, Jewish kid upbringing. And then, we moved to White Plains in Westchester. Yeah, I was a little bit older. That was kind of like my middle school and elementary school years. And, yeah, just pretty standard, like low key development as a child. And then when we moved to Rochester, like that's when I feel like my world opened up to all different kinds of influences and stuff, because at that point I was a little bit older and I was actively seeking stuff out for myself that I was interested in.
Were, you know, the time period before you moved, like was your family musical at all? Or was that just something that kind of like the inception began with you?
They're into music. Like my parents are definitely huge music fans. Neither of them are like musical, you know? My mom, they're both like children of the 60s and 70s, like singer songwriter scene. So like my mom especially was really into stuff like Elton John and James Taylor and all kind of like the stalwarts of that era. But my dad, while he also liked that stuff, he was into a lot of pretty wild shit. Like, he was really into a lot of like the German krautrock bands like Can and Neu, Kraftwerk, stuff like that.
Okay, I know Kraftwerk. I don't know the others. So what? What's explain this movement to me.
Sure. I mean, I'm no expert on it, but my general like broad strokes understanding of it is basically back in, I want to say like the early 70s, there was this whole movement of bands coming out of Germany who were just like wildly experimental, not just like in the music they were making, but in their studio techniques and their live performances and just lots of very extended instrumental passages, lots of just very trippy stuff going on. And one of like the most famous bands from that whole period of time is this band Can, C-A-N. And they had a singer who I believe his name was Domo Suzuki. I feel like I have that right. It's been a while since I've read their Wikipedia page.
I'm curious.
But they're a fucking awesome band.
Can?
Yeah, just really like just profoundly interesting discography. They have an album called Tago Mago that's amazing. It's probably their most well-known one. And then by the end, they were getting into more synthy, not like low-key, but just more like mellow music. And I believe their last album is called Future Days. And it's that also is just like an incredible record. But my dad was really into stuff like that. And he, later on growing up, he used to tell me that when I was a baby and I was in my crib, he used to play me like Kraftwerk songs and stuff because it put me to sleep. It relaxed me.
how did he find this? Cause it seems like something that would be like, you know, it's not like now where you have the internet and things are kind of like nuanced, things are kind of thrown at you all the time. I feel right. Like at that time period, it's like you'd have to like actively search for something like this.
Yeah, no, totally. I think my dad had like a cool older brother and cool cousins and stuff who just kind of, because my dad grew up in Horseheads and Potsdam, which are, I mean, in upstate New York, which already is kind of like far removed from the big city. Like,
no,
Horseheads in particular is in the middle of nowhere. So he was lucky enough to, I think, to have family members that would drive out and come back with these records. And, you know, he was introduced to like, you know, stuff like Black Sabbath that way, stuff like The Clash and, Sex Pistols. So he just kind of passed all that stuff down to me. And yeah, I think just my dad having that in the house and exposing it to me from such an early age really gave me an appreciation really early on for like weirder music.
Was that the kind of stuff that you were listening to before you moved to Rochester?
No, no, definitely not. I don't think I really like had an appreciation for how cool that stuff was until much later.
Okay.
Cause when we moved to Rochester, I was like 13, 14. And by that time I was exclusively into just like punk bands, pop punk bands, like Fat Records stuff, Epitaph stuff, and anything that, and ska especially was huge for me. Like I loved stuff like Streetlight Manifesto and Real Big Fish and just that whole world. So stuff that didn't sound like that, I just was fully not interested in.
How had you discovered that stuff in general?
A few different ways. I mean, I was definitely like a child of the internet. You know, because I feel like when I was really ravenously discovering music and seeking stuff out, it was right in the golden age of file sharing and blogs and stuff. Yeah, that ancient technology.
Oh yeah.
So
media fires, like, the blog spots, of course.
Yeah, media fires, Zippy Share, all that stuff. So I just, you know, I was on a daily basis, I was going on these blogs and just trying to consume as much stuff as I could.
Like, well, so, I mean, like, all right, what led you to kind of, you know, to that? Cause it's like, you know, obviously Fat Records bands are the bands like it's like, you know, maybe if you like, you might hear like a NoFX song in like a video game or something, or just maybe in like a skate oriented thing. But like some of that stuff, it's like not necessarily on the radio. How did you kind of come to find that, like, you know, before you started kind of seeking it out via file sharing?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, something that stands out to me is Green Day, because like innumerable people in the world, I feel like that band was their gateway band to guitar music, you know?
Right.
And cause they were accessible, they were everywhere. And I vividly remember being at, I think it was like a Borders Books with my mom, and she was always super open and supportive to the stuff that I was into. And we were walking around the CD section, which feels like ancient to say, but we were walking around a Borders Books looking at CDs, which is like the most 2002 sentence I've ever heard.
Yes, it is. Cause I did the very same shit, man. I remember very well.
And, they had Green Day's Dookie there. And I, you know, being, it's probably like 10 at the time, 11, maybe, I thought it was hilarious. Like, this band named an album after poop. Like, there could be nothing better than this.
Yeah.
And my mom, like, sort of, frustratingly let me buy it. And, or I should say begrudgingly. And I loved it. I mean, I was hooked. It was fast. It was hooky. It was just like everything I needed at that hyperactive age. And from then on, it was just like, okay, how do I find more bands like Green Day? Okay. And I would just do some unsupervised internet searching. And from that, you know, you come up with stuff like The Offspring and all those and Blink, obviously, like just anything in that whole realm was fair game to me.
When you were like listening to this stuff and potentially even like those early internet days of the early 2000s, are you like, oh, I want to be in like a band, or is it kind of just like, you know, okay. So yes. All right.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I mean to cut you off, but yeah, like,
no, you're fine.
I've sort of been realizing this as I've gotten older, but like from as long as I can remember, like as long as I was consuming music and like developing memories surrounding music, the only thing that I've wanted to do was be in a band. And whether it's just always been a singular goal in my life. And I think I just looked up to people in bands so much. I thought that like there couldn't possibly be anything cooler than like touring around and playing music for people. And and that's all I ever wanted. And honestly, like that feeling has not dissipated as I've gotten older.
Yes, it does. If it's in your soul, it really doesn't. It's the number one thing that I want to do. I fucking understand. You know, so you find that you find this stuff, you're kind of finding a taste. You like the speed, you like the energy. You know, you're seeking out different, you know, versions of kind of what you're hearing. You want to play music. Now, does that like happen? Did you get like a taste of any of that before you moved, or is that something that came afterwards?
Everything came afterwards. I mean, when we were still living downstate, I was consuming a lot of music, but I was still really young. So I didn't really know anybody that was playing in bands. I knew kids who like, and I say kids, like not in the New England way, like what's up kid. I mean like children who played guitar and dabbled and played a little bit of drums here and there, but I didn't know anybody who was like involved in a scene or even like went to shows. So all of that came after we moved up here.
Okay. So you move to Rochester, like, you know, what is sort of your first encounter with, you say that comes after you move, what was sort of your first encounter with that kind of like a scene or a person that played music locally, or kind of like an avenue for you?
It was definitely in high school. So when I started high school here, there was a kid named Rory who I think when I was a freshman, he was a junior. He was like 2 or 3 years older than me. But at that point he was already really involved in like the local hardcore scene around here. And he was like to the point where he was, you know, booking shows, he was in a couple different bands, and he was just doing stuff that I had no idea that you could do like as a young person. And I just found that just not only mind blowing, but just tremendously inspiring, because I guess in my perspective as at the time, as like a 15, 16 year old, the music was a thing that was done by adults, you know? And when I feel like when you're young, when you're like a teenager, your perspective of like what an old person is or like what an older person is so much different than when you actually like grow up a little bit. Because like, to me, the idea of somebody booking a show or being in a band, but, and they were like 18, 19 years old was just flabbergasted. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
So he, I think he saw that I was into stuff like, I mean, at that point I had had a little bit of exposure to hardcore and stuff. So I knew the, I guess the entry level quote unquote bands. Like I knew the Minor Threats and Black Flags and Dead Kennedys, et cetera.
Of course.
So,
yes.
So I was into that. Like that was the music that I listened to the most. And I think he saw me in a Black Flag shirt one day and he was like, you know, I book shows around here and I play in this band, and he gave me a CD. And from then on, he just kind of like took me under his wing a little bit.
What was the name of the band?
He was in a few. I think at that point he was in like a straight edge hardcore band called Declarations. Okay. And the band that I think he did the most with was this band called Death Camp. And they were kind of like, they started a little bit more like Boston hardcore style, like a little bit tougher, but then they, as they progressed, they kind of became more rock and rolly.
But interesting.
Yeah. That band was really, really good. Death Camp was like, they definitely did the most, I think, out of like bands of that era of like Rochester music in terms of like getting out and playing shows and releasing music.
What was your first like show after you had moved there? Like, had you been to like a, like anything like that prior?
No, fuck no. I had been to a show. Well, maybe two. I think the first show I ever went to was Blondie and the Cars at Jones Beach.
Pretty sick. Okay.
And yeah, it was dope. I mean, I guess as a kid, like as an 11-year-old, I didn't really recognize how sick that was. But
yeah,
that was like all supervised. It was with like my friend's parents and stuff, and it was seated. But then the first show that I ever went to unsupervised was with my brother in the city. I think it was at the Roseland Ballroom, and it was like this huge package ska tour. It was like Less Than Jake, Streetlight Manifesto, Real Big Fish, and an opener. I forget who the opener was.
Okay.
But that was like my first exposure to being in like a venue by myself and like, you know, standing room only, et cetera, et cetera. And it was intoxicating. I loved it. And then, but the first hardcore show I ever went to, like the first underground, like 100-150 people or less show I went to was, it was Death Before Dishonor.
Okay.
Who else?
I imagine they did probably pretty good in Rochester.
Oh yeah, people love them over here.
Yeah, I imagine that.
I think this band Forked Tongues opened. They were kind of a local band. They were sort of like Integrity Worship, like Holy Terror.
That's a very Integrity Worship name.
Yes,
is. For sure.
Oh yeah, they were doing the double V's and everything.
There's a specific era. There would be a lot of younger listeners that don't know about this time period where there was you get a lot of like. Your W's or V's and maybe your U's are also V's. Yeah, it's good shit. Yeah.
Dude, sure. Yeah, it's an era of time that gets lost like just in history, I feel like almost. But for a good 3 or 4 years, it was everywhere. There were many bands trying to ape that style and that imagery.
Like, yo, like the very like the artist Albrecht Dürer, like it's very you know what I'm talking about, like Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse type style, like that's the imagery. Yeah, the V's is really it right there. Lots of occult stuff, you know.
all the Charles Manson like imagery.
Tons of
like
Charles Manson imagery. Yeah, for sure.
Like but that show was crazy. I remember so my friend Rory that I mentioned, he let me know, like, yeah, I'm going to the show tonight. Like, you should come. You should go to, like, a local hardcore show and see what it's like and see if it's something you're into. And I was down 100%. So we went, after he got off of work, he, like, picked me up at my parents' house and we drove out to this venue, the Dublin Underground, which was, like, this really sloppy, sketchy dive bar venue right downtown. And... all the openers were great. And then Death Before Dishonor played. And there's this huge fight, like, of course. And it's all, I mean, Rochester's kind of like the face tattoo capital of the world.
Yeah.
So there's,
that's what I was saying. I was like, I bet that Forest Honor did probably pretty solid. That's what I'm imagining.
Lots of just like unaddressed beef just got addressed at that show. And people, there's this massive brawl and the cops got called. And I think, I didn't witness this, but people have told me that like a bunch of people got like dragged out onto the street and maced, and it was just brutal.
How old are you at the time?
Like 15.
Okay. How did you feel about this?
I loved it.
You see, at 15, if you see that shit, you're like, this is like what happens in like action movies.
Yeah, 100%.
And it's like happening in front of you, and you're like, oh my God. Like, you know, like.
And being me, like coming from just a totally suburban, like privileged standpoint, just being in this room that just felt like I was in fucking Sid and Nancy or something, and there's people in like jerseys and leather jackets just beating the shit out of each other. Like, I was just intoxicated by it. I thought it was the coolest thing I'd ever been witness to. And from that point on, I was just trying to go to as many shows as possible, although most of them were not nearly as dramatic as that one.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And like, you know, and that's the thing is, I'm sure you would have had a good time of it and not been like that, you know, initially.
Oh, totally.
But it's like, but that happening, you're kind of like, when you see stuff like that, you're like, whoa, I need, because that's the thing about like hardcore punk and metal music is like, I think one of the things that is a hooking point for this, for like our like larger world that doesn't exist other places as much, as that you go to an event and there is the concept of like something could happen that you have no like prediction about, like, you know, and there's a level of excitement to that. In my opinion, where it's like, you know, like the unpredictable is afoot, you know, like right now, in combination with solid music. Totally. So after you witness, you know, this, like kind of what was the next, you know, like what shows did you start going to? Were you like, I gotta like fulfill my dream of like doing like a band to be a part of this? Kind of what was the next move for you?
I mean, from that moment on, I was just trying to be present at as many shows as I possibly could. And thankfully, I mean, at that time in Rochester music history, this is probably like 2007, 2008. There were a ton of bands and shows happening around here constantly. I mean, there was this band Soul Control, who...
Oh, yeah, I remember them. I forgot that they were from Rochester.
Well, Rory is the singer. I think the rest of the band was from Providence, but...
Oh, okay, there we go, because I was like, whoa, okay. Like,
yeah.
I thought they were Rhode Island. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, but he... just because, you know, Rory was from here, they used to play up here all the time. And saw them a bunch, and they were like a totally different vibe than a band like Death Before Dishonor, right? Definitely. Because they were just a little bit more, I don't want to say heartfelt, but just a little bit more earnest, like in the subject matter. It was a little bit more heady, a little bit more spiritual. Yeah.
Soul Control was a very interesting band because they weren't like a lot of stuff that was happening at the time at all. They were hard to compare to another band, period.
Yeah, totally.
Like, I think they get lost to time a little bit. They kind of had like a bit of a Burn vibe, but it was, again, polar opposite from Death Before Dishonor, though, in a way.
Yeah, so. Totally. And I had love for you know, both of those styles. You know, like, I was really into the more like straight edge, like tough beatdown stuff. But I also really love stuff like Soul Control that was a little bit more like avant-garde in certain ways. But
yeah,
I guess the cool thing about living in Rochester was that at that time, especially, was, we're kind of sandwiched right in between Syracuse and Buffalo. So bands who were coming out of Buffalo and coming out of Syracuse used to come play here all the time. And we would drive to Buffalo and drive to Syracuse to see them. So, you know, I saw that band Forfeit a ton. Like, just tons of Buffalo bands, like, I saw all the time. And you used to go to shows like the Funeral Home in Buffalo, which is just like...
Oh, shit. Me too.
Yeah. It was literally just a decommissioned funeral home. Like, they had formaldehyde tanks in the basement.
Dude.
It was dope.
This was awesome. Yeah.
Saw so many good shows there. And, I was just trying to go to as many shows as I possibly could. And at the same time, I was just trying to make something happen. Like, I was just trying to be in a band. And I knew that I couldn't... I mean, I had tried... you know, like I've only earnestly tried to practice playing guitar in the last year, but I've been at that point when I was like 16, 17, I was trying to play guitar a little bit, but not really like committing to it. But I just wanted to give myself some kind of skill sets so that I could be in a band. And thankfully, the drummer of that band I mentioned, Fort Tongues, Joel, who's still a very good friend of mine, he and this guy, Chris, they were trying to do, like, I don't even know what the initial pitch was, like, as a band, but it was somewhere in, like, the Holy Terror, Integrity-style territory, but a little bit
cool.
A little bit weirder, a little bit more experimental, and they needed a guitar player, and I basically just kind of like lied my way into a job with that band because I didn't know how to play guitar at all, and I was like, yeah, I'll be your guitar player. And I think
did you have one?
I did. I had an Epiphone SG.
Okay.
Didn't have an amp. I had to like borrow all of my gear every practice from some other band who was using the space. But I tried out for this band, and I think like you know I can sort of see their perspective now that I'm so far removed from it, because I think they could tell pretty much immediately that I couldn't play guitar, but they didn't want to like break my heart and squash any interest that I had in making music. So they let me like stay in the band, and the band just kind of like became a different thing because of my lack of ability.
Oh, okay. So what did it become?
Well, we called the band Virgins. Initially we spelled it with two V's, Holy Terror style.
There we go. Hell
so
yeah.
I guess technically you would have pronounced it Virgins, but, you know, at that time in Rochester, like everybody just loved all of those Integrity ripoff bands. So we were just trying to like stylistically steal that a little bit, but musically it was just like, we only ever had one song, and the song was like 20 minutes long, and it was just like five parts that we kind of just smashed together because we didn't know how to complete like a single 3 minute song and make it sound good. So we just took all the parts and all like the little riffs that we had and just combined them. And that was
that's,
it. That was
that's our an set. Interesting concept. So you had a 7-inch though.
No.
Oh, you said it was your set. Okay.
Yeah. No, we never even got close to that far. I think we played like 9 or 10 shows in Rochester, you know, 3 or 4 of them were disasters, like just gear breaking down, like just nonsense. We played one show in Allentown, Pennsylvania, and that was it. And we were done. And that was the end of my first band experience.
And you were still in high school at this point, yes?
Yep, the entire time.
Okay. So you do Virgins. You pick your poison. You do that stops, and you know, are you like, okay, I've gotten my bearings a little bit. I can maybe now I can do something different, or was it, or were you kind of like trepidatious about moving on to something new? Like kind of like, where was your head?
Definitely wasn't trepidatious. I mean, I wanted to get right back into it, but I knew that I couldn't play guitar, you know, because okay. That was, at that point, it was like I was still in high school. I think I was like a senior when we broke up, and I was about to be in college, and I just had way too much on my plate, and I knew that I just wasn't going to have the time and the discipline to devote to learning guitar in a way that was meaningful. So my prerogative at that point was just like, well, I'll sing in a band, you know, I'll scream, because like, it's, if I can't play guitar, this is kind of like the next best thing.
Yeah.
And also, even when we were on stage as Virgins, you know, I'd be standing up there with my guitar and I'd be looking at our singer and I would just think to myself, I want to be out there. I want to be doing what he's doing. And all the people that I looked up to in bands, like, you know, my favorite band in the whole world was At The Drive-In.
Oh,
I thought, okay. I love them. I was obsessed with that band. And I thought that Cedric, the singer, was the coolest person who had ever lived. I just, his whole style, his energy, like his presence. I wanted that. I wanted to emulate that. I wanted to do like my best approximation of that kind of front man. So I knew when Virgins broke up, like I want to sing in a band. And at that point, I knew a couple kids from the scene who were more like metal guys. There's this kid, Tyler, who again, I'm still really good friends with, and this kid, Tim, and this kid, Connor. And, you know, Virgins had played with some of their, they're like the trio that's just always been in a trillion different bands around here. Just like a billion different iterations of the same lineup. But we had played with some of their older bands, and I knew that they were kind of starting Napalm Death, like grindcore type thing.
Sick.
Yeah, and at that point, I was moving away from hardcore a little bit. Like, I was still really into the stuff that I liked. Like, I was, I think, like, Death Wish was really popping off at that time. And
what year is this? Is this, like, late 2000s?
This is probably, like, 2010, 2011.
Yeah, okay. I remember that era of Death Wish. That makes sense. Sure.
Yeah, so it was, like, Blacklisted was huge. Like, Hope Conspiracy, I think, had just put out that 7-inch they did. And yeah, like The Carrier was around, Mother of Mercy. They weren't a Death Wish band, I don't think, but they were also like playing around a lot.
They were, and they were feel like in sort of a similar world. Like I think they did like a Bridge Nine record, and they were on something. I think they were on Bob Shedd's record label Control. Yep. Maybe I think they hopped around like a little bit on that, but they still played kind of in that. I could see them playing with the Death Wish bands of that time period.
Yeah, for sure. So I was really into all of those bands, you know, kind of like the darker, more like riffy, I guess like evil, quote unquote, sounding hardcore.
For sure.
So I was super into those bands, but even by then, you know, not that I ever stopped listening to hardcore. Like, I've been listening to it as long as I can remember, but I was moving way more metal at that point.
Yeah.
I was getting really into like the really early Norwegian black metal stuff, like Mayhem and all those bands. And
of course,
I was really fascinated with the early, you know, British crust and grind bands like, you know, Discharge and Heresy and especially Napalm Death. But yeah, like I digress. This kid Tyler, I knew that he was starting a grind band and they needed a vocalist. So I offered to try out and, you know, I just went over to like his parents' house one day and he just showed me these songs they had been working on and I just kind of like let it rip over it. And yeah, and the rest is kind of history. And then we started a band called Controlled by Fear together.
Cool name. So it was of the nature of like Napalm Death, what I imagine like Terrorizer maybe or yep, you know, like things absolutely. Like that. Okay,
yeah, and okay. He was him and Tim the drummer were really into a lot of like the LA bands like Despise You and Excruciating Terror especially.
Oh hell yeah, dude!
Yeah,
so I saw Despise You one time. And it was particularly sick. It was like a free show, some big brewery, and it was just awesome. Like good, yeah, like dude, that, killer vibe.
That band is fucking awesome. I was also lucky enough to see them at Maryland Death Fest a couple years ago, and
they played. Yeah, yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah, and that shit was sick. I was so glad to finally see them. But yeah, they were really into all those bands, like just all like the West Coast, like grind and power violence stuff, and they like exposed me to that whole world of music, and that became my new obsession at that point.
So like where I'm like with like the West Coast like stuff, where you listened like Infest and like No Comment or yep. Okay, all right, so things of that nature. I got you. All right,
absolutely.
Okay, which a lot of that, and so it's interesting when I was younger, I knew that grind and like power violence and like for the nerds out there, they're going to be like, that's only a certain time period of bands that were, from, you know, whatever. But stuff of that nature. I didn't know the grind stuff as well, but I knew the PV stuff because it was a little closer to hardcore. And it's funny. There was also a time in my life where I was like, oh, I'm going to listen to like Crossed Out a bunch and like Charles Bronson, and, you know, whatever. I feel like I know a lot of people that like do a dive at some point into that stuff. So you make this band Controlled by Fear. Mm-hmm. What was kind of like, what was the first show? How was the operation? You know, kind of how did that start out? How did it go?
It was great. I mean, that was kind of like my first experience being in a band that actually like wrote songs, you know, and had kind of like, not that Virgins had bad chemistry, but like Controlled by Fear just had like a much stronger process in the way that we were doing things. Not that we ever really got out there and did much like on the road or anything like that, because I was still 17, 18 years old when we were in that band. And, but we played shows around Rochester. You know, we played Buffalo. We played like just general Western New York area. And it was cool. I mean, the first show we ever did, I think, was in, what is the name? It's the city where Lucille Ball was born. I think it's Jamestown or Jonestown. No, it's not Jonestown, but I believe it's Jamestown, New York. It's kind of in the middle of nowhere. But yeah, we played like a brewery in Jamestown, and then we played the Bug Jar in Rochester a bunch. Like, it was kind of the stalwart venue around here. And yeah, we did I guess like our full length. It was, you know, 12 minutes of music, but we managed to like cobble together enough material to release a record. Never really pressed it. We did CDs that we self-made, and digitally we like released it on Grindcore Karaoke, which was the dude from Agoraphobic Nosebleed's kind of like online distribution center.
I didn't even know it was a thing.
He I don't know if he still operates it, but he used to just put on for tons and tons of like regional no-name grind bands and just give them a platform to release their stuff.
So we
sent him the record, and he liked it, and he put it on his website, and that was huge for me at the time. So that was kind of the first time I had ever been in a band that had received for any size, like any recognition, you know, by anybody. So that was cool. And yeah, that band did not last very long. I mean, there was some like interband drama that led to things kind of dissipating. And I think, I don't remember exactly how it ended, but I ended up walking away from it because I was going to college and I just didn't have the time to devote to playing shows anymore. And I knew I was moving downstate to go to school, and yeah, I kind of had a unceremonious exit from the band, and then wasn't really in another band for like a year or two after that.
So you say you're going downstate. Where'd you end up going to college?
So I was only downstate for college for a year. I went to I didn't do grades or any kind of like real serious pursuit of education in high school. You know, I regret that a little bit. And now that I'm older, I wish I had like focused a little bit more in class. But at the time, like, you know, the only thing that could keep my attention was music and bands and stuff. And I was like, why the fuck do I need to take these like college prep courses when I like could just be in a local band instead? You
know, like what was substantially cooler. So I'll tell you that right now.
That was my prerogative. And I didn't want to hear any sort of reason. And went down to, didn't really get into a lot of schools, but I did get into Wagner on Staten Island. So I went down there for like a semester and a half just studying like a general liberal arts degree because I knew I had an interest in writing and reading and stuff like that and like criticism, but I had no idea what I was going to study in school that would lead to any kind of sustainable career. So I was just fucking around pretty much. Yeah. I was there for like a semester and a half, and eventually I just like kind of decided I was done with it. And I had a long conversation with my parents, and you know, they were way more supportive than they needed to be with what I was going through at the time. But I could tell through talking to them that they were going to be crushed if I just dropped out of college and didn't do anything. So I ended up transferring to the Rochester Institute of Technology, or RIT. So I moved back home and I started studying journalism there. Went basically right from one semester into the next. There wasn't really a holdover period where I wasn't in school. It's just from moving back to town and coming back to college, like I was just kind of reinserted into the scene all over again. And I was studying and I was making friends at school, but I had all this downtime all of a sudden because I was back home. And, it's not that I wasn't taking like my classes seriously, but because RIT is such a technical focused college, you know, most of the people who go there are pursuing engineering degrees and stuff like that. Their journalism and their liberal arts schools aren't really that intensive. So I was kind of doing the bare minimum in school, and I had all this free time, and I just started putting out feelers to see if anybody wanted to start a new band.
And okay, so you're there, you go back, you're back in the Rochester area, and you're putting out kind of like, you know, like the signal that you're trying to rock again. What comes back your way?
So yeah, I was putting out the bad signal. I was trying to see like, yo, let's do a band. Let's make something happen. And I was talking to all the people that I had, you know, been communicating with and associated with and were my friends before I had moved. And if they were doing bands, like they were established, like, so they didn't really have time to do anything else. So everybody who wasn't controlled by fear had since moved on and started a band called Hallucination Realized, which they're still around and they're awesome. It's just like sick techie grindcore stuff.
Cool. All right.
So they were busy, and the only person I really knew who was looking for something was Joel from Virgins, the drummer. And at that point, I was way into metal, but I was really starting to discover like screamo, and not like a, you know, Bullet for My Valentine shit. Like
like real screamo. I know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I Hate Myself, like stuff like that. Yeah. Orchid, et cetera. And I loved it.
'99. Yeah,
exactly.
Like, yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
Exactly. So I was like obsessed with the whole world of bands, all like the Level Playing record stuff. And I remember I was just talking to Joel one day, we were just texting, and he was like, what are you doing now that you're back in town? Like, and I was just told him, like, I'm trying to do a band. He's like, what kind of band are you trying to do? And I was like, well, I would love to do something like, you know, Orchid or like Funeral Diner, to something that was kind of a screamo-ish, but a little bit more atmospheric. And he was like, well, you know, me and this kid, Joe, who I don't think he was ever an official member, but he was filling in and doing like tours with that band, Such Gold. They were kind of like, they were the big Rochester poster boys at the time.
That makes sense for the time period. Yeah.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. He was like, me and this dude are trying to do a band a lot like that. Like, why don't you swing by and feel it out? So yeah, one day I just went to their practice space, and me and Joel and Joe and this kid, well, actually I don't think Kevin joined until later, but we just jammed on some stuff. And I think like, we initially set out trying to do stuff that was a little bit more like grindy emo violence type shit. But with our influences and the stuff that we were raised on, it just couldn't help but sounding a little bit more atmospheric, a little bit more like melodic and emotive in certain ways. And Joe especially is a really, at least at the time, he was a really like pedal oriented guitarist. Like, he had like two huge boards. So we were just doing all this like DL4, like loop shit. And, and then we started this band called Druce. And that was like the next 4 or 5 years of my life was being in that band.
So, okay. This is really interesting, because this, if you had like, this is not the turn I would have thought for. Yeah,
I'm all over the place.
Yeah, no, it's interesting, because it's like, what, you know, what you told me is like kind of your come up on like hardcore and then getting into grindcore and then going to doing something like you're doing now. I would be like, that seems like a logical progression. This seems like a not like a divergence in a direction that I just would not have imagined. So with Druce, like, and you did it for, you said, 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, man. I mean, the timeline is so hazy now, but yeah. I think we put out our first demo in 2015 or 20. No, it was 2014.
Okay.
And we were a band for like 5 years. So I think we stopped in early 2019. We never officially broke up, but it was just like the classic local band thing where we just kind of like all went our separate ways. So I think we were an active, like working band for about 5 years.
So during that time period, what, like, you know, like, cause that's a while to be a band. Like, you know, did you guys like hit like any like longer tours? Was it just kind of playing regionally? What was sort of the operation?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we, I think we were all in a place where we just wanted to like hit it hard, you know, because Joel had been in a few bands, but I think like the stuff that he was involved with at the time was kind of starting to fall apart. And Joe was, you know, kind of like the hired gun for Such Gold, but he wanted to do something a little bit more like his own. And I just wanted to be in a band, you know, I just wanted to make some, that was, like I said, you know, from Jump Street, that was just what I wanted to fucking do. So we were all like pot committed to making this thing happen. So we did a demo tape. It was like five songs. And yeah, like within Rochester, we just kind of got this traction pretty fast because we just had a lot of friends who were into what we were doing. And, you know, there wasn't really another band in the local scene that, that sounded like us. You know, there was a lot of more straightforward hardcore stuff, straightforward metal stuff, but nobody really drawing from the influences that we had. So people were excited to see us and we were excited to play. And I think we just kind of fed off of each other's energy. So for a good, you know, like 3 or 4 years there, we just kind of had this nice little cohesive following within Rochester. And we did a demo. We did a like an EP. It was really a second demo, but we did two tapes. And then we did an LP with Head to Wall. They're like a Columbus based label. Mm-hmm. We got linked up with them and we did a full length. And I think we put that out in like 2018. Okay. And, by that point, I mean, we had started to slow down a little bit, but touring wise, we definitely did a bunch of stuff. You know, we did tons of regional, like weekender, 3-5 day things. Sure. Never really got out for that long stretches, but we did one kind of ill-fated 2-week-long tour where we like rent. Joel bought a van, but it was kind of a clunker. So by the time we got down to Georgia, the whole like something catastrophic with the van. I think like the front axle just snapped or something. Fucking terrifying.
Been there, dude. Goddamn.
Dude, I won't ramble on this, but that whole series of events was
like, no, let's hear it. That's why you're here. What happened?
It was a nightmare, dude. We were all really good friends, but you know how it is. Like sometimes when you're in a band with people that you're friends with first, like sometimes things get a little bit more complicated and messy than they should be.
Yeah.
Just like feelings getting hurt for no reason. Like, you know, this guy's talking shit about this guy and a little camp start forming. And we always made it work. You know, at the end of the day, we reconvened and did the show or, you know, just hashed it out. But by the time we were ready to put out our full length, like there's lots of inner band fighting and drama and stuff. Okay. Yeah. So it was getting kind of exhausting, but then we did, this 2-week-long tour with this band In or Out from Charleston, who were awesome. They were just like really, they were in our wheelhouse. They were really noodly kind of progressive screamo type stuff. It's really the best way I can describe it. But, we basically self-booked this whole tour, and by we, I mean it was honestly mostly me.
Goes that way.
Yeah. Like I was just tearing my fucking hair out trying to like book 13 shows. Just nothing was happening. And it was always like a really humbling experience whenever we played outside of Rochester, because we would play in Rochester and all of our friends would show up and people would be going ape shit. And then, you know, you play Pittsburgh the next day and it's like 3 people show up. So yeah. We kind of learned pretty fast, like, okay, maybe our only real following is in our hometown. But for some reason, you know, we wanted to tour. That was just all of our ambition. But we did this tour. The shows were fine, but we get down to Georgia and something happens with the van. Like, I'm pretty sure one of the axles broke and it was this massive fix. The whole thing was going to cost like $4,000 or something. And we were making zero money doing this thing. In fact,
but say $4,000 is probably not in the budget.
No, I mean like we had maybe at that point in the tour, like 6-7 shows in, had made like $300. Like we were, okay. We were paying out of pocket to get from city to city. Like it was just so brutal. But yeah, so that just like sucked all the wind out of our sails. But the light at the end of the tunnel was, in Rochester in like 3 days, we had a show booked with Majority Rule.
Okay.
You know, we were all four of us were just massive fans of that band. And we were like, there's no fucking way we can miss this. So we just scrambled together whatever money we had. We left the van in Georgia. We got like a rental minivan. We put as much gear as we could pile into it as possible. And then we just drove like 12 hours, 13 hours straight, just to get back to Rochester so we could play the show the next day. And it was a great show, but that was kind of like just that whole series of events, you know, really took the wind out of our sails a bit, I think. And
that would be demoralizing. Yeah.
Very demoralizing is definitely the word. And, you know, like after that, we tried to make a couple other things happen. We did like a weekend here or there, but I mean, the passion was just kind of gone, you know, and you could read the writing on the wall, and I didn't really want to admit it, but it was like, Joe, and no hard feelings whatsoever. Like I'm still friends with these guys. Like I love them to pieces, but it was like Joe was getting really into doing his own thing, like solo stuff. He wanted to do kind of more soundscape, like ambient stuff. Joel was like getting a little bit older. And I think the idea of sacrificing all of this to go on these tours that weren't going to make him any money, which is seeming less and less appealing to him. So after that, like we put out the full length and we kind of just dissipated, and that was that.
During the time period in which you were doing doing this, what were you doing like away from music? Like, so you had gone home to do school, and were you just doing school, or are you like having to like work and do school? Kind of what was your like day to day?
Yeah, so I mean, the entire time that I was in Druze, I was also in college. So I was studying journalism. And the only real reason that I had picked journalism as a major was because RIT didn't have like a literature degree or like a creative writing degree, which is what I really wanted to do, because I knew that like the only real skill set that I feel like I have is I'm like halfway decent at putting together a sentence, you know? So I wanted to do something like that, but journalism was the closest approximation that I could get there. Right. So I was studying, doing the band, going back and forth, and then I graduated, and I just kind of bounced around, you know, doing like little internships and jobs with my degree around town. Like I interned at the Philharmonic Orchestra for a little bit, the RPO, just doing like writing ad copy for them, pretty much doing like general copywriting stuff. I interned and later worked at the city newspaper, which is kind of like the lifestyle magazine. That was kind of like I was in the arts and entertainment division. So I just would write reviews and write-ups of shows and events that were happening around town. But it was never, I never really had like a job that I was serious about, because to me, the most important thing was the band and everything that I did. And it seems so like single-minded and kind of like borderline psychotic looking back at it. But I mean, it's the way it was. Like everything that I did in my life was structured around making the band happen. And yeah. I mean, dude, like I can't tell you how many times I quit jobs to go on like a 6-day tour.
Hell, like, I mean, dude, hell yeah. Like I get it, man.
I know you do. Like it's just, it happened constantly, but you know, I would, and it was driving like my parents crazy. Like I feel like it was driving my girlfriend crazy. Cause like, it's not like I was like, I had like a shitty call center job or like a food service job where I was making 13, 14 bucks an hour max. And then I was quitting so I could go on tour and make thousands and thousands of dollars. Like,
yeah, sure.
I had a like relatively stable jobs that had room to grow and advance like in a career perspective, but I threw it away in a heartbeat so I could go on a tour and lose money. And
I mean,
like,
The desire to rock is hard to satiate, my friend. Like, you know, sometimes you just got to do it.
Yeah, it's an illness of the mind. And that was all I wanted. And yeah, like at least like 5, 6, 7 jobs I probably quit during like my college and post college, first couple of years of post college life, just so we could tour. And
yeah, honestly, respect.
Thanks, man. Yeah, like
that was it. So
that was it.
So, you know, that's that time period. You know, you guys say you stop in what, beginning of 2019?
Yeah, so we did the full length. I want to say that came out in 2018. I feel like that's right. And I mean, I just kind of like, I was so deflated and defeated at that point with just like the grind and just all of the grueling aspects of being in a more like DIY band. And I just kind of put all of that negative energy into this record. And at the time I was also kind of like, it sounds excessive to call it like a crisis of faith or anything like that. Cause I'm not a religious person by any stretch of the imagination, but I had like some deaths in the family and I, you know, my mom's side of the family is not observantly Jewish, but they are Jewish. And I was kind of like just becoming really interested with that side of my life and like my ancestry and my heritage. And basically like what resulted is we wrote this record that we just like tore ourselves apart getting finished. And the lyrical content that I put into it was just this absolute mishmash of like everything I was going through emotionally at the time and all of these like questions that I had about myself and where I came from and like what all of that meant. And I think the end result just kind of like turned people off a little bit because the stuff, I mean, sometimes like, I mean, the stuff that we had been writing and releasing up until that point was like emotive. It was emotional, but it was way more in a bigger perspective sense. It was dealing with themes and subject matter that people could relate to and grasp onto more. And I was actively trying to do that. When I was writing stuff, you know, in the back of my mind or in the front of my mind the entire time, I was like, will people sing along to this? You know, like, will people like want to like post these lyrics somewhere? And that it's like shameful to admit, but it's true. You know, as a front man, like, yeah, like
you can say all day that you don't care about that shit, but as a front person, like, it's an intoxicating feeling when people know your shit in general.
Absolutely.
And second, it's like if they're like screaming it back at you, it's like it's an unparalleled feeling. So absolutely, I get wanting to make stuff that appeals to them.
Yeah, 100%. And like, and the cherry on top of everything you just said, it's like if you're able to write stuff that resonates with people and like that they want to scream along to, but also it like means a lot to you, then you just created like a perfect thing. And we had been doing that, but with the full length, you know, I look back at it and I laugh because the stuff that I was interested in writing about was just all very personal. And it was very, and not personal, like I got my heart broken, or personal, like I'm having problems with like my relationships and stuff, like personal in the sense where I was like, who am I as a person? Like, what is the self?
I think that is far more interesting than just kind of like umbrella, you know, an umbrella of just appealing to a general emotional sense. I think also with like, correct me if I'm wrong, but in screamo music, real screamo music, I feel like doing the thing where you are getting like hyper personal or like talking about like a hyper specific subject is more acceptable and cool and nuanced over there than anywhere else. So yeah. I find it interesting that people like didn't really gravitate towards it.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with you, but yeah, I just think like the stuff that I was interested in talking about was just like, it wasn't relatable to most of the people that were interested in our band. And I can't blame them for a second, because, you know, you have two EPs, demos, whatever you want to call them, that are, you know, front to back, just loaded with songs about like just general emotional stuff. And then all of a sudden, okay, here comes the 45 minute long full length, and half the songs are like, really, really fucking intense, personal psychoanalysis about like what it means to be a Jewish person. And then like the other, five songs are about like, my personal reckoning with things that were happening in my life, and not phrased in a way that other people could grab onto. Like, it was just my own psyche, my own psychosis. And I could tell immediately when we started playing those songs live that people were just not into it, because we would do some of the older stuff and people would be like moshing and singing along, grabbing the mic, and then like, okay, here comes this song, and this is a brand new one. And all of a sudden it was like we were performing in a vacuum, you know, just all the life just gets sucked out of the room. If I sound bitter about it, like, I promise I'm not. It's just like, I knew what I was doing, and I knew that what we were creating at the time, at least lyrically, was going to alienate people. And I had come to kind of expect that reaction, and pretty much exactly what I assumed was going to happen. And then, yeah, from we just dropped that record and things just kind of like fizzled out after that.
Sorry about that, everyone. We had to cut from the audio system we were using, and we are on a different audio system now. So apologies on a few minutes there where the audio was kind of like, you know, going up and down in quality, but we're on a more consistent, you know, leveling now. Appreciate your patience. Since this has kind of become a completely remote thing, we've had to do, you know, jump through some hoops and everything. Thanks again for sticking with us through kind of this troubleshooting time period. So anyway, what we were talking about was kind of like the end of that musical project, and, you know, kind of like what was, you know, like the alienating aspect of getting hyper specific and like, you know, like your connection to, you know, Judaism, and then just kind of like the thought of self and everything, you know, stuff that's deep within your mind that probably your existing fans weren't grasping onto. You know, you feel the fade, that kind of dissipates. Once that was over, you know, kind of like, where was your head at? What, you know, what did you think to do next?
Yeah. Well, I mean, by the time we had put out the record, and things had started like fading out a little bit, while the band was still active, I had gotten reached out to by Kyle, who is like the original guitar player in Undeath. And I was kind of vaguely aware of him because Drews and his old band had played a couple shows together, and he was kind of just like a Syracuse guy. So I knew he existed, but had never really talked to him or had any kind of like familiarity with him. But yeah, I just remember one day he reached out to me and he asked if I had any interest in singing in a death metal band. And that was just kind of a huge relief to me to hear, because, I mean, for one thing, obviously I was, because I had been to metal and death metal specifically for many, many years at that point. But the second thing, I was so ready to be in like a stress-free band, because with Drews, it was like, we had plenty of good times, you know, we made stuff happen, but there was always this element of just like stress and uncertainty that went along with pretty much everything that we did. But yeah, I was really looking to have an experience that was a little bit more like low stakes, I guess. And on top of that, I just wanted to be in a metal band, because I at that point, like, I mean, we're talking 3 years ago. I found it hilarious that I've been so into metal, like death metal specifically, for that long, and I still hadn't been in a death metal band. And he reached out, like I said, and he asked me if I wanted to come try out, and I was I was there in an instant. And I think like a week later, I was at their practice base downtown. It was him and our drummer, Matt. And he just showed me the riffs that he had, showed me the songs they had been working on. And I just kind of like did my best John Gallagher Dying Fetus impression over it. And the rest, as they say, is history.
Well, so, and that's the thing is like with Undeath, that's like so interesting to me is that like, you know, you're telling me that you did Druce for like 4 or 5 years. If you had told me you had been doing Undeath for like, you know, like, I don't know, 4 years before now, for 5 years, I'd be like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. They're like, you know, like, and we're going to get to this, we're gonna, like, but like a couple LPs worth of music deep and everything. So stuff I imagine for Undeath must have happened very quickly.
Oh my God, dude, you have no idea. It happened so fast because like, not to say we didn't have like our grinding time a little bit, you know, like we started the band, and I mean, Kyle, I attribute a lot of like our earliest success to him specifically, just because like the dude is just a machine when it comes to writing. And especially back then, we were all so broke and we were all just so fed up with what we were currently doing. You know, I was on a tail end of Druce, and I was just so emotionally cashed out with everything. I just wanted to do something that was just so, it was just fun. Like, I just wanted to have fun with music again. And Kyle was coming out of a different band, and he was working at Tim Hortons and just like serving coffee, making zero money. And he was in a very similar position to me where he was just trying to make something happen, like for once. And our drummer Matt had just moved from Chicago to Rochester, and he was just, again, like, yeah, he was just trying to make something happen. So we were all in a very similar headspace with making music. And you know, when we recorded our first demo, which is literally just called Demo 19, we were just bonding over Cannibal Corpse and Cryptopsy and Morbid Angel and just these death metal bands that we loved and worshipped. And Kyle was just concocting these insane riffs, and we were just writing these songs over him. And it all came together really fast. Like, we recorded that demo in the practice space. We like taped mics to the drums and shit. And we didn't have a pop filter for the mic, so we used like an old t-shirt. And the whole process was like just as DIY as it gets. And, you know, we released it, and then we reached out to Caligari, who's like primarily a tape label that we're all fans of. And he offered to put out a cassette, and we did that. And yeah, things just kind of kept happening really fast from there. You know, by the time we released Demo 19 officially, we had most of Sentient Autolysis, which is the second demo, written. So we were able to put both of those things out in pretty quick succession of one another. And when Sentient Autolysis came out, that's when things started getting like kind of serious in terms of the attention that we were getting, because we had like a little bit of internet buzz. Like, you know, there were a couple YouTube comments and like forum stuff that we were seeing where people were into the demo. But with Sentient Autolysis, like, all of a sudden there was this attention on us where like Trevor Strnad from the Black Dahlia Murder was like hyping us up.
Yeah.
And that was, he was like our biggest high profile supporter from pretty much the beginning. And you know, we played a show in Toronto, which was like our third or fourth, it was like our fourth show. And that one really sticks out to me because I remember we played in Toronto, which is a place where we didn't know anybody, and 20 or 30 kids came out like just to see us. And we had a demo under our belt, and we had just put out another one. And I remember some guy coming up to me and saying like, yeah, I drove 3.5 hours to see you.
Damn.
And that just like blew my mind. And that was the first real instance or inkling, I guess, that I had where I was like, damn, like maybe this band is something, you know, like maybe people are taking it kind of seriously. And, yeah, then things just kind of kept growing and growing at a very fast clip. And then Prosthetic reached out to us and signed us. And it just kept going from there, you know?
And had y'all like played out really away from like Toronto and like the Rochester area at like during 2019, or was it all just kind of like local or regional stuff?
It was mostly regional for sure. I mean, we did before we got signed. I mean, we had only really played like 7 or 8 shows, maybe a little bit more than that, maybe like 10 or 12. But we played Rochester a bunch. Like we played with a Cerebral Rot and Fetid when they came through.
Oh, I remember that tour. Hell yeah. That was cool.
Yeah. It was dope. And then we played Toronto. We drove down to, I remember we like our third show or fourth show ever, we drove down to Brooklyn to play at the Brooklyn Bazaar, rest in peace. Mm-hmm. And we were going to play with that band, which is funny that Un and Undeath were on a show together. Yeah. Uh-huh. But it was them and this band Wormwitch from, I think they're from Montreal or somewhere in Canada. Mm-hmm. And we got an offer to come down and open it. And Trevor from Black Dahlia Murder had DM'd us like 2 or 3 days beforehand, basically just saying like, yeah, I'm going to come out to your guys' show in Brooklyn. I'm really excited to see you. And I remember we were joking about it in the van, like, yeah, this dude's not fucking coming. And we roll up to the show and we walk downstairs and Trevor's like already there, just hanging out, drinking a beer. And Kyle and I were just like pants shittingly nervous about it. We were like, yo, oh, you talked to
him. We got to be sick. God damn it.
Like we have to be good now. Fuck. Yeah. And you know, we were a 3-piece. It was just it was Kyle on guitar, Matt playing drums, and I was doing vocals. We didn't have a bass player. That was it. That was the band.
Whoa. I had no idea.
Yeah, dude. There's videos on YouTube. Like the earliest shows that we ever played, we were a 3-piece.
You were Pig Destroyer style. Damn, okay.
Yeah, but it wasn't out of any sort of like artistic integrity. It was strictly out of desperation.
This is just who we know. Shit. All right.
It's just because we didn't have anybody around who could play the riffs that Kyle was writing on bass, and we wanted a second guitar player, but we just couldn't find the right guy. And but we just wanted to play shows and play out so bad that we just said fuck it and just did it. And they were good. Like I had a really fun time playing those shows. You know, we went out with that band Sing with Sogobog for 5 shows. Mm-hmm. We were supposed to go out with them for another like week, but our van broke down. Oof. We were just using Kyle's like Astro van as the band van pretty much. And it broke down in Detroit and we had to drive home. And that was in February of 2020.
Oh,
so I remember. Yeah. So I remember driving home after we got the van fixed and saying like, oh, you know, like it sucks to have to cancel shows, but like we'll get right back on it. And then like a month later, the entire world was shut down.
Yep. Oh man. So all right. Did you release that initial LP like while things were locked down?
Yes. So we signed to Prosthetic in like November, December 2019, something like that. And by that point, we had like 5 or 6 of the songs mostly written for the record for Lesions, the first album. And, you know, we just got a really good feeling from Prosthetic. Like they reached out to us, and Steve Joe, the kind of like A&R point guy over there, was just like super transparent and super like attentive and gracious to us. And we just got a really good feeling from him. So we signed with them, and then they were like, oh, well, you know, you said you're working on an LP. Like, where are you at with it? And we were like, oh, you know, we're maybe a little bit over halfway writing it. And they were like, oh, cool, cool, cool. Like, do you think you could have the entire thing submitted by like March? And at that point, it was mid December. So we were like, shit, I guess so. So then all of a sudden it was crunch time, and Kyle had to, because again, it can't be stated enough. Like it was just the 3 of us and Kyle was writing everything. So we had to just hunker down, and Kyle just had to bang out like the last 3 or 4 songs. And we went into the studio in like January or February, and we had the record submitted by early April. And then it came out in, shit, when did it come out? It was sometime in the summer. I want to say it was June or July. No. I'm wrong. It was no, actually I'm right. it was June or July of 2020. We put out the record. So we did it during lockdown, and we didn't have like any opportunity to play shows around it. but we just wanted to release an album.
You know, I remember, and this is how I became first initiated with Undeath in general. I was in the local record store in Richmond, and the guy who ran it was like, and I was like, I picked it up, that record, and he was like, oh, you should check that out. He's like, you'll fuck with that. Like, that's like the good shit. And I was like, oh, I haven't heard of this band before. Went, checked it out. And I was like, oh shit. I was like, yeah, this is quality. This is sick as fuck. And, what was interesting is that, like, you know, it's kind of what I said earlier. It seemed tenured. It seemed that I was like, oh, these guys have probably been hitting this for like a minute, you know, and this is their big debut. If you told me the band had started the year prior, I would have been like, yo, what? Like, I've been like very like I'm like confused, but that comes out, but you're still like, it's like you can only really kind of do online sales and stuff. You can't really, like, middle of 2020, you can't, no one's playing anything. So, you know, what was kind of like the band plan, and what were you doing otherwise?
Right. Yeah. I mean, we had aspirations while we were, when the record was kind of like, because I mean, when COVID started and when things started locking down, at least at the beginning, there was kind of this, and I'm sure you remember, like, there was this glimmer of hope where it was like, oh, well, like, hopefully this thing will only last like 3 weeks.
Yeah, and a few weeks will be fine.
Right. And then we can just get back to our regularly scheduled programming. But obviously it didn't. And we had the record submitted, and we were in the process of booking, because Prosthetic had linked us up with this guy who was our booking agent for like a year, and then we moved on to somebody else. But he was kind of sort of haphazardly trying to throw together like a U.S. tour for us with this band Phobophilic from, I think they're from Fargo, that we were really good, really big fans of. And that, it just fell apart. And that was the only real touring thing that we had on the horizon. So at that point, we kind of had to have like a conversation and be like, look, you know, we're not playing shows anytime soon. This is just not happening. I don't know what the world is going to look like in the coming years. I don't know if shows are ever going to come back. So let's just release this album and let's just push it as hard as we can. And honestly, you know, for as desperate and as horrible as, you know, coronavirus has been and continues to be, it kind of, in some ways, it sounds callous, but it's true. Like, the timing of everything worked out really well for us because,
hey, some people benefited from this, you know, and yeah, it is what it is.
It is what it is. Like, it's just, we all of a sudden, where we would have been splitting up time between promoting the record and trying to play shows, all of a sudden, we found ourselves in this position where everybody's at home, everybody's on their phones and their computers all the time. Everybody's trying to just do whatever they can do to take their minds off of, you know, just the world at large. And all of a sudden, hey, here we come. We're this new band and we have this record. And just whether it was just a total confluence of events where just we put it out at the right time and the right people heard it and promoted it. You know, we're incredibly fortunate in a lot of the exposure that we've had. You know, we had a really positive Pitchfork review that got us a ton of traction.
Oh yeah.
That dude, Anthony Fantano,
that's right. Pin Drop. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He,
whatever it is,
he did like a glowing review of the album that put us on a ton of people's radars, and like all of a sudden the record was doing great. And I mean, I had expectations for it, but they weren't anything beyond like, I hope people enjoy this. You know, I was never thinking about like, I hope this sells well, or I hope this like gets good reviews. But all of a sudden, like, all of those things were happening.
Especially because it in the time period that you've been in bands prior to this, it's like, you know, you've been like, oh, I'm happy that people showed up to see us, or, you know, I'm happy that locally we've done well, or, you know, what have you. Like, you know, to be in a position where it's like, you go from kind of, I feel like it's like you skipped like 100 steps almost between Druce and doing Undeath almost, where it was like, you know, I mean, now it's like in the world of death metal, you're like a household name. You know,
kind yeah.
of. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, it's like, I just feel so. I to this day, I just feel so confused about it all because, like, with you know, I had expectations for what I wanted Undeath to be, but it was never that serious, and things just became serious very fast. You know, I even when Druce was kind of winding down and we were starting Undeath, like, I was viewing Undeath as a Druce side project. You know, I was like, I'll do this little death metal band on the side, but Druce is obviously like my serious band. And then all of a sudden, like within the span of 6 to 8 months, the tables just got turned completely.
You know, and that's the thing. I think one of the things that sort of happens is obviously it's not all the time, but sometimes the stuff that we're like not like micromanaging, like that we're not like putting like every like waking moment and thought into whatever, the stuff that just kind of is like naturally exists and naturally happens. That's the stuff that hits. You know, I've talked to a lot of people on this podcast that have been in bands that have like blown up overnight. And I've asked them, you know, I'm like, how did this happen? And pretty much across the board, the answer is usually, I have no idea. Like, yeah. It's always like, I didn't do that intentionally, just wrote a demo or just wrote a record, and this is what happened. You know, it's just lighting.
And you know, it's funny, like, you just can't say enough for the circumstances of the time. Yeah. Because it's not like, oh, I'm going to come out here and be like, oh yeah, like any success that Undeath has had is because, you know, we did this specific thing that we had envisioned the entire time and everything worked out the exact way we had planned it. You know, like there was no master plan that we were following. We just were lucky enough. And it really, like, it 80 to 90% of it just comes down to sheer luck, because we were fortunate enough and lucky enough that we had started a death metal band, and not just a death metal band, but a death metal band that was drawing from a specific set of influences at the time that, at the same time that death metal was having like a bit of a renaissance, like specifically that style of death metal, because, you know, the law of the land for so many years was this way more technical, progressive, just like blisteringly fast, hyper processed death metal. And and like I love a lot of that shit, but the stuff that resonates the most with me is stuff like Cannibal and Cryptopsy and Morbid Angel and Autopsy. And, you know, I think people were just hungry for that shit, and all like the Maggot Stomp bands and the Caligari bands and the Head Split Records bands and Rotted Life and all these labels were just popping up all at the same time that were really capitalizing on the specific style and feeling of death metal. And we were just fortunate enough to be kind of like on the crest of that wave, like right at the exact right time.
Yeah. You know what? You know, what you're kind of talking about is like kind of like what the ether was at the time as well as when you came out. It's like, yeah, like a lot of the Maggot Stomp bands started being like a thing that, you know, people talk about. You talk about, you know, Sang and like bands like 200 Stab Wounds come out, and, you know, you guys are like less kind of caveman-y, but like, you know, more technical. You talk about kind of like the cerebral rot fetids of the world. So, you know, like this stuff sort of comes in, the Frozen Souls, like this stuff that it's like kind of happening right now. It's like y'all are like kind of in the Cannibal Corpse world enough to kind of fit in with it. Whereas a few years ago, that kind of death metal wasn't really, you know, so to speak, the soup du jour. And now it is. So yeah, I mean, it does seem like planets kind of aligned for y'all's release. And so, you know, you release the record 2020, 2021, you know, like, I imagine you started writing for the next one.
Yeah. So by the time we released Lesions, we had a good chunk of stuff written for the next record. Like, not the whole thing by any means, but Kyle and Matt had been playing around with like the first three or four songs on the album. So the ball was in motion, and excuse me, we definitely like just, we couldn't tour, we couldn't play shows, so we just, you know, put our heads down and got right back to work. And after Lesions came out, it was just this whole series of events where things just kind of got a little bit more serious for the band, where you know, I'm shipping out records from my house that Prosthetic is sending me, and I literally like can't keep up with it because I'm making multiple trips to the post office like every day just trying to like get this shit sent out.
That's awesome.
You know, yeah, and it was awesome, and to this day I'm still like beyond grateful and honored for all of that support and attention. But it just kind of like got to the point where I just couldn't keep up with it. And I remember late 2020, I reached out to Steve from Prosthetic, and I just kind of leveled with him, and I was like, look dude, like I don't know how much sway you have in this world, and also I don't know anything about it because none of my bands have ever had like a manager before, but like, you know, do you know anybody that might potentially be interested in like helping Undeath out on like a managerial level? Because I couldn't do it myself anymore. And thankfully he knew this dude, Colin, who works with like Wrist Meat Razor, and like he works with Knocked Loose a little bit.
Oh, Colin Feeney. Yes.
Colin Feeney.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Steve was like, hey, actually, I know this dude, Colin. Like, let me get you guys in touch. And I had like a Zoom call with Colin. I just kind of like explained our situation, and you know, we just got to talking and we hit it off like immediately. And he like, we basically just like took him on as a manager, like right then and there. And honestly, like it's so funny because coming from the world of like punk and hardcore and screamo and way more like basement show DIY stuff, you kind of develop this really self-effacing attitude when it comes to a lot of your success and like the work that you put in. So I was like, I just didn't know what to expect with having a manager. And I honestly think it's like the best thing that's ever happened to our band, just because like just having an extra set of hands on deck, like helping you on a daily basis, making things happen. Like, I've never had that kind of luxury before. And we came into 2021 with Colin, and all of a sudden it was like, we were more focused than ever. And we just had like a team behind us, and we recorded the next album, the one that's about to come out in April. We recorded that in Philly in, it was probably like February or March of 2021. And yeah, we just got down to it, and pretty much from the time we recorded it until a couple of days ago, everything's just been about, you know, getting the record ready to be released.
You know, and so, you know, you record that, you know, that record, and, you know, kind of get that ready, you know, to come out again on Prosthetic. You know, away from doing the record this, you know, this past year, you know, when events started coming back in mid-July, let's say June, July, what was the first, what was the first show back for you guys?
First show back for us, we did, I believe it was on Memorial Day weekend. We did a outdoor show in Syracuse.
Okay. Oh yes. Okay.
Yeah. We played at a combination skate park and tennis court. We did a show with, this band Stand Alone, who's like a Syracuse straight edge band.
I know who they are. Yeah.
Yep. And we did a show with, it was with them and this band, The Thrill, who another Syracuse band, just like very straight up, like, fast, aggressive, like Bridge Nine style hardcore.
I've played with I played with The Thrill in Wilkes Barre one time.
Yep. Yeah. So, they're good friends
of
ours.
They were cool.
Yep. Yeah. We did an outdoor show with them, and, it was awesome, and it just felt amazing to like play those songs live, because at that point we, you know, had this record out, and Lesions had been out for almost a year at that point. And in 2021, but we hadn't played any of the songs for people, like for an audience yet. So it just felt incredible to finally get out and do that. And right after we played that show, or maybe it was like right before, I got a text from, it was either like Colin or Kyle. And basically they were just like, you know, clear your schedule for September because you got an offer to go out with the Black Dahlia Murder on a US tour.
Yes.
And I was like, yeah, like I'm fucking there. Like, I'm down. So we did that show in Syracuse and then we had like 3 months to kill. And then come September, we just drove out to Chicago and went out with Black Dahlia Murder and After the Burial, Carnifex, and Rivers of Nile. Is very like all over the place, eclectic metal package tour. And we just went out for a month and it was amazing. And we went from having like 20 or something regional shows under our belt to all of a sudden our first US tour, like our first actual like outing as a band, we're playing 1,000, 1,200, 1,500 cap rooms. And it's the first, really like one of the first metal tours post COVID. Well, we're still in COVID, but like post shows coming back.
I just say post lockdown. Yeah, because
post lockdown.
Yeah, I feel like that's a way to put it. You know.
Yeah, for sure. So it was one of the first tours post lockdown, and people were ravenous to go to shows again. So out of the, I don't remember how many it was, like 26, 27 shows on that tour, like at least 3/4 of them sold out.
Hell so, yes.
It was like just so surreal, top to bottom. The entire experience was just bizarre, and it was amazing. Like we rolled up to the first show in Chicago, and you know, there's like stage hands rushing out and like helping us load our gear into the venue, and we're like, "What the fuck is going on?" And then we walk on stage, and there's 1,000 people like just going crazy, and they're just so excited to see a band again. And it was awesome. And most of the shows just have that kind of really ecstatic, like euphoric energy around them. And I seriously could not envision like a better first tour for our band.
So this is also putting it like wild stuff into perspective for me. Cause it's like, okay, you guys go do that. And then like, you know, come you're back for like a month, I guess. I saw y'all a month after that at the show that I did in Richmond. And so y'all hadn't even like, it's like a way, like it had it not been for that tour, y'all would have only had like 20 shows regionally under your belt. It could have fooled me, you know, again, I am like learning like how lightning fast and like the steep grade that y'all have like risen on, and it is like mind blowing to me.
It's mind blowing to me too.
Cool. I mean, it's like, you know, like that's awesome. It makes me appreciate y'all even more. So you know, you guys, you know, hit the shows for fall, and this past fall here, and you know, you announced the new record, you know, this past week. You know, what information can you give about that and the release of that this year?
Well, yeah, I mean, the new record, it's called Time to Rise from the Grave. I mean, Kyle came up with that title like before the record was even done being written, and I just loved it so much. I was like, like, who puts an ellipses in an album title? Yeah, I'm
fucking with that shit. I saw that. I was like, that's cool. I like that.
So, yeah, it's so like 80s to me. I loved that. And I was like, yeah, we're keeping that. Like, I don't care what the rest of the record sounds like. Like, that's the title. Yeah, we wrote that, and it's coming out on April 22nd. Couldn't get 420. It's all good.
Damn.
It's all good. But yeah, that's coming out April 22nd. You know, like, obviously I'm biased. Like I think very highly of it. I think all the stuff that we were trying to accomplish on Lesions, just like the big hooks, the big choruses, like the big riffs, just everything, just maximizing on everything else. I think this record is just a total doubling and tripling down on all of those elements. And you know, we weren't trying to get cute with it. We weren't trying to get experimental. We weren't like, okay, this is our next, like our sophomore record. Let's go into the studio for a month and play around with synthesizers. Like, we wanted to write a fucking sick death metal record. And at the end of the day, regardless of what any of our personal ambitions are and whatever we think about the band on like an individual level, I feel like the band's ethos is just like, we're just trying to write good death metal songs. And I think this new record is like the perfect encapsulation of what the band is about. So if you liked Lesions at all, or if you liked like anything that we've done in the past, I think this record's just going to be like, it's going to hit all the right spots for you.
Powerful. Love it. You know, and I personally very excited. I know a lot of people I know very excited about this. What, you know, away from that coming out in a few months, what would be, you say, the can you drop any, like, you know, I imagine you're going to be hitting it pretty hard around the record if you're able, like, you know, like you guys plan to be on the road this year, correct?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. New places, a lot of the same, like, you know, I know you probably can't release too much out there, but what can you put out there?
I mean, US, absolutely. Like, we have one booked that should be getting announced pretty soon, like a US tour, with some like really sick bands that I'm just like flabbergasted that we get to go on tour with. That's going to be huge. You know, at least like for me personally, just getting to like see these bands every night. Definitely going to try to like go out for at least two, maybe three like full US tours this year. Yeah. And then beyond that, we were hoping to maybe hit Europe this year, but with just like all the border stuff and travel stuff still being,
it can be dicey totally right now.
It's really dicey. It's really just totally up in the air. So I don't know how realistic that is this year, but definitely coming down the pike pretty soon. But yeah, like if you live in the continental United States, you're definitely going to have at least one opportunity to see Undead this year.
Fuck yes. Well, beautiful. You know, that leads us to right now. You know, is before we sign off here, is there anything you want to leave the listenership with?
You know, I won't get too saccharine or sappy here, but I mean, just take it from me, man. Like nothing happens overnight, and also nothing happens without sweat equity, without work, without strife and struggle. And you know, I feel enormously privileged and lucky for any success and positive attention that Undeath has had for the, you know, 3-4 years we've been a band. But you know, we even if things happened really fast for Undeath, like the three of us and the original members, but now like the five of us that comprise the band, we've been at this shit forever. You know, just putting in years and years and years of work, just being in bands and like learning the lay of the land and making connections and meeting people and just trying to be like a decent human being. And, you know, I think that if you really feel passionate about music and about performance and being in a band, and that's what you want to do, if not for a living, then just like something you want to do all the time, like you really just got to fucking put your back to the wall and just make that the essence of what you do on a day-to-day basis. Because otherwise, like, unless you can make those sacrifices and unless you can commit to it on like a full hour by hour level, you're just going to fall short and you're not going to achieve what you're capable of achieving. So I just want to encourage people just to, if you're serious about what you do, just get out there and do it as much as possible. And I assure you that things will happen for you in a positive way.
Really, really outstanding and wise words from somebody that has been, you know, up and down and is on the rise right now. It's just there's a lot of gratitude in there, and I love to hear it. This has been outstanding. Everyone, thank you for joining us. If you want to support the podcast, once again, please subscribe to our Patreon at www.patreon.com/Forum of Passion. Until next time, thank you.
Thank you.